Hello, hello, hello. Here's another episode with Marlenka reading Sri Aurobindo, The Synthesis of Yoga, Chapter 5, The Ascent of the Sacrifice, The Works of Knowledge and Psychic Healing. This, then, is in its foundations the integral knowledge of the Supreme and Infinite to whom we offer our sacrifice. And this nature of the sacrifice itself in its triple character, a sacrifice of works, a sacrifice of love and adoration, a sacrifice of knowledge. For even when we speak of the sacrifice of works by itself, we do not mean the offering only of our outward acts, but of all that is active and dynamic in us. Our internal movements, no less than our external doings, are to be consecrated on the one altar. The inner heart of all work that is made into a sacrifice is a labor of self-discipline and self-perfection by which we can hope to become conscious and luminous with light from above poured into all our movements of mind, heart, will, sense, life, and body. An increasing light of divine consciousness will make us close in soul and one by identity in our inmost being and spiritual substance with the master of the world sacrifice, the supreme object of existence proposed by the ancient Vedanta. But also, it will tend to make us one in our becoming by resemblance to the divine in our nature, the mystic sense of the symbol of sacrifice, in the sealed speech of the seers of the Veda. But if this is to be the character of the rapid evolution from a mental to a spiritual being contemplated by the integral yoga, a question arises, full of many perplexities but of great dynamic importance. How are we to deal with life and works as they now are, with the activities proper to our still unchanged human nature? An ascension towards a greater consciousness, an occupation of our mind, life, and body by its powers has been accepted as the outstanding yoga, the object of the yoga. But still, life here, not some other life elsewhere, is proposed as the immediate field of the action of spirit, a transformation, not an annihilation of our instrumental being and nature. And what then becomes of the present activities of our being? Activities of the mind turned towards knowledge and the expression of knowledge, activities of our emotional and sensational parts, activities of outward conduct, creation, production, the will turned towards mastery over men, things, life, the world, the forces of nature. Are they to be abandoned and to be replaced by some other way of living in which a spiritualized consciousness can find its true expression and figure? Are they to be maintained as they are in their outward appearance, but transformed by an inner spirit in the act or enlarged in scope and liberated into new forms by a reversal of consciousness such as was seen on earth when man took up the vital activities of the animal to mentalize and extend and transfigure them by the infusion of reason, thinking will, refined emotion, and organized intelligence? Or is there to be an abandonment in part, a preservation only of such of them as can bear a spiritual change, and for the rest, the creation of a new life and expression, in its form no less than in its inspiration and motive force of the unity, the wideness, peace, joy, and harmony of the liberated spirit? It is this problem most of all that has exercised the minds of those who have tried to trace the paths that lead from the human to the divine in the long journey of the yoga. Every kind of solution has been offered, from the entire abandonment of works and life, so far as that is physically possible, to the acceptance of life as is, but with a new spirit animating, uplifting its movements, in appearance the same as they were, but changed in the spirit behind them, and therefore in their inner significance. The extreme solution insisted on by the world-shunning ascetic, or the inward-turned aesthetical and self-oblivious mystic, is evidently foreign to the purpose of an integral yoga. For if we are to realize the divine in the world, it cannot be done by leaving aside the world action and action itself altogether. At a less high pitch, it was laid down by the religious mind in ancient times that one should keep only such actions as are in their nature part of the seeking, service, or cult of the divine, and such others as are attached to these, or, in addition, those that are indispensable to the ordinary setting of life, but done in a religious spirit and according to the injunctions of traditional religion and scripture. But this is too formalist a rule for the fulfillment of the free spirit in works, and it is besides professedly no more than a provisional solution for tiding over the transition from life in the world to a life in the beyond, which still remains the sole ultimate purpose. An integral yoga must lean rather to the Catholic injunction of the Gita that even the liberated soul living in the truth should still do all the works of life, so that the plan of universal evolution under a secret divine leading may not languish, may not suffer. But if all works are to be done with the same forms and on the same lines as they are now done in the ignorance, our gain is only inward, and our life is in danger of becoming the dubious and ambiguous formula of an inner light doing the works of an outer twilight, the perfect spirit expressing itself in a mold of imperfection foreign to its own divine nature. If no better can be done for a time, and during a long period of transition something like this does inevitably happen, then so it must remain till things are ready and the spirit within is powerful enough to impose its own forms on the life of the body and the world outside. But this can be accepted only as a transitional stage and not as our soul's ideal or the ultimate goal of the passage. We shall pause here for today and continue with the next episode. Wishing you light for the highest good of all concerned. Signing off, Marlenka.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.